Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Like Uncle, like Violet on Disney Channel's new series Ultraviolet and Black Scorpion. June 3rd, next Friday, is the premiere, and executive producers Leo Chu and Eric Garcia join me next in an internet radio exclusive. A familiar orange face from 1990s television make a TV return June 6th on Nickelodeon. Yes, it's Face, da-da-da-da, and the comeback is Face's Music Party. We'll touch base with executive producer David Kleinier next half hour. Also ahead, Tony, she wrote, other news notes, quickies, and a brand new classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on Spotify, the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Verbal Reason, and starting today, Acast. This just in, tomorrow will be televised, brought to you by Audible.com. The leading provider of spoken audio entertainment information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get all the good stuff with a free book or two when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. 72 degrees top of the hour here in the Big Apple. And on this Monday afternoon, we welcome you to our latest edition of the program all about TV's current and future. And we welcome those of you tuning us in on our newest podcast affiliate, Acast. It's A-C-A-S-T. Happy to have you aboard and everyone else, too. We have a wonderful trio of guests coming away over the next hour, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple. Pick up the phone, dial in, and use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio. You can also use our chat room to interact with our guests. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. While the promo is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk Radio speaker tune-in screen. Follow the instructions of people live with you. Our dynamic duo from Ultraviolet and Black Scorpion, Leo Chu and Eric Garcia, will join me after these news note quickies. Murder, She Wrote star Angela Lansbury will get a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Tony Awards. The ceremony plays live June 12th on CBS and Paramount+. 1 week earlier, June 5th to be exact, Vanessa Hudgens will host MTV's annual Movie and TV Awards. BET, Comedy Central, Paramount Network, MTV2, and VH1 will simulcast. Expect to see a new Scooby-Doo Toon series in 2024 on HBO Max and Cartoon Network. This one, featuring the Mystery Pups, is aimed at preschoolers and a Scooby in mystery-solving mode at a summer camp. Deborah Martin Chase, one of the Equalizer's reboots executive produced on CBS, will continue her Universal TV relationship under a new contract extension. The Arizona Cardinals will be the next NFL team to be profiled during a season on HBO's popular Hard Knocks series. New stunt competition series, The Final Straw, with Abbott Elementary co-star Janelle James hosting and Peyton Manning as an executive producer, begins July 10th on ABC. And alien surgeons will team up to solve the universe's toughest mental cases, or medical cases as the case may be, in The Hospital, no relationship to the famous Padchevsky-written movie. It's the new Amazon Studios Toon series, landing a two-season run on Prime Video. Natasha Lyonne and Maya Rudolph are among the voice cast. And that is news notes for today. A week from Friday, June 3rd to be exact, Disney Channel will be launching not one but two new live-action series. One is called The Villains of Valley View. It will kick off with a pair of half-hour episodes at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and then the hour after, it's Ultraviolet and Black Scorpion, also with two half-hour episodes premiering at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Our first two guests are a dynamic duo that have won all sorts of awards, including Emmy nominations and Emmy awards for their work, both in live action and in animation. Among their credits, Alexa and Katie, the popular Netflix series that ran 3 or 4 seasons, Afro Samurai, which was one of the first adult action-adventure series to win an Emmy Award in terms of anime style. Over a decade ago, they did the Nickelodeon series Super Ninjas and a whole lot more. It's a pleasure to welcome this program for the very first time, the executive producers and showrunners of Ultraviolet and Black Scorpion, Leo Chu, and Eric Garcia. Leo and Eric, happy to have you with us.
Hello,
hey,
hi.
Simon, happy to be here.
Yeah, we love your show.
And where are you both calling from?
I'm calling from sunny Pittsburgh.
Sunny Pittsburgh? I'm calling from sunny California.
All right. So sunny. Hey, it's pretty good. And it's sunny here, too, in North New York. You know, both of you had a very eclectic career in television. You do live-action shows for kids, live-action shows for families and adults, animated shows for kids, animated shows for adults. what do you think about the fact that you have such an eclectic career? Leo, we'll start with you.
You know what? We just have eclectic tastes, I think. That's one of the things that sort of defines us. But, you know, I guess as we're kind of picking projects and things, you know, one of the things that we really try to look at and look for are what's not in the world and what's not out there. I think a lot of people look at, like, what's there already and kind of try to follow the trends. We kind of go against that a little bit. And we talked amongst ourselves about, like, what is it that we can bring that's new into the world and then create change that way.
Mm-hmm. Eric, what about you? How did you and Leo meet?
How did we meet? Oh, we met on, a ski trip that we had we had some mutual friends who were not that great of friends, and we ended up going up to a cabin up in Big Bear. And when we got there, the person who invited us, you know, their friends kind of showed up because the snow was good. So we all had to double up. And that's how I spent my first night with Leo Chu.
That, yeah, I think he's trying to say that we actually had to share a bed and a teenage reunion, just comforter cover. And that's kind of how we got to know each other creatively, because it's so awkward because nobody brought sleeping bags and we're lying there and we're like, so what sort of movies do you like? Oh, I like that too. And then we just started bonding over like our taste over movies and TV shows and stuff.
But both of you.
But I'm really happy to have been able to work on, like, you know,
in a showrunner course at the Writers Guild of America.
Yes, we. You know what? We actually did that when we got our first live action series. I guess it's very competitive to get in, and they don't have enough slots for all the people who apply, and they determine it based a lot on need, because everyone who applies is, you know, they're all WGA members, they're all super talented and amazing writers, and so, like, you're writing talent and craft, like, I don't think it counts for anything as replying, you just completely need, and so we had worked in animation up until that point, and we had never run a live-action show before. And we were like, guys, we have to let us into this thing because we don't know what we're doing. And we basically went in there, and they let us in, and we were literally learning things on Saturday. The course takes over the course of several Saturdays, like over 6 weeks or 8 weeks, I think. And we literally learn things on Saturday, and they come in on Monday and, like, apply them. We'd be like, hey, I think we need a tone meeting. Or, hey, I think why don't we look at the transportation budget for this? You know, like, we'd learn all these things and just come in to make ourselves not sound so stupid. But I'm exaggerating.
It was
slightly.
Great. It was really great. I mean, just to learn the best practices. And really, it's all about the creativity. So it's like, how can you get the best out of all the people that are working with you to create the same vision? And, you know, it's a lot of communication, but it's also a lot of treating people with respect. And so, you know, I mean, there's a good, you know, light at the end of the tunnel, which is like, we just wanted to make the best show possible. And they really helped us do that.
No, that's true. I think really what they teach you in that program is what best practices are. And they bring sort of a roster of sort of rock star showrunners who talk about how they run their shows, and you sort of learn from example, and then you take what makes sense to you, and then you apply it to your own show.
In a moment, we're going to find out how our dynamic duo, Leo Chu and Eric Garcia, took their lessons from The Writers of America, creating the show that is going to be coming on Disney Channel next Friday night at 9 p.m. Pacific time. We're talking about Ultraviolet and Black Scorpion. Leo is joining us live from Pittsburgh, PA. Eric joining us live from Los Angeles in California, and yours truly, Simon Applebaum, here in Nueva York. And we're all here this Monday afternoon on Tomorrow Be Televised. Happy you're aboard wherever you're catching us. And if you have a question or comment for our guests, ring it in. The number you use is 646-652-2906. Or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. The first of three episodes we're doing this week as we wrap up May. We're going to do three more, by the way, first 3 days of June to kick that month off. Coming up on our next episode, which will be with you on Wednesday at this very hour, we will have Ceci Ruiz. He is the editor-in-chief of the Weather Channel in Espanol, which started earlier this month, along with celebrating the Weather Channel's 40th anniversary. And Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, we will have a very special lead guest. It is the executive producer and creator of the new AMC series premiering in June called Dark Winds. Fellow executive producers, just two very interesting people, Robert Redford and the creator of Game of Thrones, George R. R. Martin. His name is Graham Rowland. He also did a show called Lost. He also is Jack Ryan for Amazon Studios. And he is with us on Wednesday, on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. That's Graham Rowland from Dark Winds on Friday. And such your reason, the Weather Channel Spaniel on Wednesday, right here, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Eric, compared to the other shows you and Leo have done, what was it like to put together Ultraviolet and Black Scorpion? Did it take easy? Was it an easier run to do it, or a harder run? What was it like?
This was the hardest show that we've ever had to work on, and you know, I mean, there were so many tremendous obstacles that you know, both creative and non-creative, that went into this one. I mean, you know, we dealt not just with a lot of production difficulties, with a hurricane, with COVID, with different you know casting issues. It was really difficult, but sometimes you have to stress the vine a little bit. And I think that the end result, you know, ultimately was a tremendous amount of fun. We had tremendous amount of people, tremendously talented people working with us. So we were able to pull this show together. So it was amazing.
Leo, how did you come up with the idea or find the person who came up with the idea?
Oh, you know what? Here's the history of the show is actually kind of interesting. So the show was actually in development already at Disney. And then they shot a pilot, and they picked it up to series, and they needed showrunners. So they brought us on board to run the show. And we were very excited about it. We thought there was a lot of potential. And then along the way, we hit some snags with, like, the studio wanted some very large reshoots on the pilot. And then they parted ways with one of the original stars. And we were like, oh, my gosh, the show is going to be canceled. This is it. It didn't even get started. And we got a call from Disney, and we thought, for sure, this is how, you know, it happened. They're going to tell us that it's not moving forward. But instead, they were like, hey, if you guys can figure out how to save the show, we still want to make it. So basically, we, you know, knuckled down and completely redeveloped the show. We kind of crammed about, I don't know, about a year and a half of development into 2 months.
While we were in kind of pre-production and while we were breaking out the season. So it's a little bit of changing wheels on a moving car.
It was crazy. They were literally building sets. We shot it in New Orleans. So they're building sets in New Orleans and calling us and saying, what should we build? And we're like, the family will need a house. They'll live in a house, so build a house. You know, and they're like, okay, we're building a house. Well, what should we build next? And we're like, well, the kids are going to go to school, so build a school. As we're writing, because as we're developing, breaking the stories, we're like, oh, my gosh, we kind of know what the general things are going to be, and then as they build these things, they become your standing sets for your series. So it was nuts. It was really nuts.
This is a very interesting show because it's sort of a, as I mentioned in the top, it's a like uncle, like role model, if you will, with Violet to become this Mexican luchador superhero. I'm curious, by the way, Eric, were you a fan of Lucha Libre growing up or in recent years where it was on networks like El Rey?
You know what? I mean, definitely in recent years. And, you know, I mean, I'm a huge fan of, like, Mexican culture. You know, when I was, like, 15 years old, I saw my first ancient Mesoamerican site, and which was in the Yucatan. And it's just like, so it's kind of been a, like a lifelong interest. But, you know, Lucha was really started in the 1930s, you know, in Mexico. And there's this kind of like, you know, this resurgence kind of what is the like new modern Mexico, you know what I mean, after their revolution. And so it just tapped into this thing, and it tapped into the idea of masks, which is very kind of like has a lot of visibility in kind of ancient Mesoamerican mythology in their ways of thought and spirituality. So, you know what I mean? It was just something that was actually building. And so when this opportunity came up, it, especially, you know, using a language that we use of superheroes today, it would seem to be like a really magical thing to combine them. So, so the Lucha Libre is a fantastic and amazing world, you know, in the wrestling. And then, you know, so we have just kind of like added to that with the superhero show.
And Leo, how did New Orleans become the place to do it?
Oh, I mean, that's a very simple answer, two words, tax credits. The show is a very expensive show, and we're able to make more show there. I think New Orleans has the highest tax credits as far as film and television production goes in the country. But also, it has a very, very talented production base. The crew is amazing, one of the best crews I've ever worked with. The people are so nice, and you really feel like you're, I don't know, just part of the community when you get there. Everybody was so kind, and I love the city. I completely fell in love with New Orleans during my time there. I will say the food is delicious, but it is not good for your cholesterol.
Incidentally, New Orleans is also the home of another Disney Channel series, which has done very well, which we covered when it started, called Secret of Sulphur Springs, which I believe now is in season 3 and doing very well. So Disney is now getting a nice association with that city and a very fast-growing production place.
Yes, absolutely. I think we may, Eric, correct me if I'm wrong, I think we were even on the same stages as the Secret of Sulphur Springs. Is that right?
Perhaps in part. I don't know. I know that we share a lot of some of the talent, you know what I mean, some of the crew.
We have a lot of the same crew. And then I know for our finale.
And that's part of the success of how you get through the show, you know what I mean? It's having a great crew, so.
Yeah.
Eric, talk about the relationship between the two key people, the person who plays Ultraviolet, who is Scarlett Estevez, and the person who plays Ultra Scorpion, that's C.R. Villarreal.
You know what? I'm so glad that you asked that question, because there is just, like, not just great chemistry in our show, but, you know, the relationship of kind of uncles and nephews and nieces it's a really special one, because, you know, there's somebody that's not your parents, but yet they are kind of an adult figure. And I think in our show, which is kind of really tremendous, is that, you know, JR has these wonderful qualities. He's like a big kid. So he is very playful, and he can be both the adult and also become, you know, like a little bit childish. You know what I mean? It's just like when I play uncle with my nieces and stuff like that, you know, you just let loose a little bit, and it's just like, you can tease them more. They can tease you more. There's a little bit of just like that chemistry that's just natural and fun. And I think that that is something that we've really captured in this show. And because, like, you know, she has her own, you know, magic mask, you know what I mean? So when he tells her to do something, you know, she's going to be a little bit, you know, rambunctious. You know what I mean? She's going to be like, look, I have my own magic mask. Like, who are you to tell me, well, you know, what to do? So there's a little bit of that, you know, oil and water and a little bit of that conflict in the absolute best and fun way. Because he is not the parent. And yet at the same time, he's the one who is more experienced with his mask. He is the one who has to train her to be, a superhero. Because after all, she is still a kid. And she doesn't know the ropes of being a superhero, and certainly not the way he has approached being a superhero. But at the end of the day, everybody finds their own path. You know what I mean? In this situation, being superheroes is kind of a heightened version, you know what I mean, of what we experience, you know, in our real lives.
Yeah, and I think this is a bit of where what Eric was talking about, too, with the melding of sort of Lucha Libre culture and mythology with superhero mythology and language, where... You know, in Lucha Libre, you have the Technicos, which are essentially your quote-unquote good guys, the ones who play by the rules, and the Rudos, who are your bad guys, who are the ones who break the rules. And what Black Scorpion is always trying to teach Ultraviolet is sort of right from wrong, and, like, what is good and playing by the rules and what is bad and, you know, and being a Rudo. But, you know, you are essentially trying to explain this to a teenager who has superpowers and a magic mask, and for the first time ever, it's able to do things that she was not able to do before, right? So she's going to use her powers in ways that maybe aren't just for crime fighting, maybe for getting ahead, for her own personal gain. And then suddenly it's like she's walking down the path of the Rudo. So that's definitely, you know, part of it. And the language sort of becomes the Lucha Libre language becomes the superhero language for this show.
Leo Chu and Eric Garcia are our guests this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Leo joins us live from Pittsburgh, PA, and Eric from California IA. And the show they're doing, Ultraviolet and Black Scorpion, and it premieres a week from Friday on the Disney Channel, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, with two back-to-back half-hour episodes. And they will be following another Disney Channel series that will be launching that day called The Villains of Valley View at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. If you have a question or comment or mini mix with Leo and Eric, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up for our next half hour, remember Face, that orange face that filled your screen if you're watching Nick Jr. growing up in the 1990s and early 2000s? Well, Face is back. Starting also in June with a new series called Faces Music Party. We'll meet the executive producer of that series. Plus, stay tuned. We have a brand new classic trivia question for you with two prizes in play, and you could be our next winner if you get the answer in first by email. More about that in our next half hour. For both of you, what did you think about the fame that you got with your Netflix series, Alexa and Katie? It ran at least three seasons. I think it was three or four, and it certainly hit its mark with a lot of people who saw it.
You know what? It's such a beloved series. We feel so fortunate to have worked on that show. And for me, this is Leo speaking. For me, it was a very, very personal episode that I really kind of poured a lot of my heart and soul into episode series. There was an episode in particular that I was thinking of, which is in the final season, called which was sort of our tribute to Stand Up to Cancer. My dad passed away from cancer. And so it was something that I really wanted to get involved with. There's a lot of things that I was kind of grappling with. And I think what was amazing about Alexa and Katie is that it sort of tells one family's struggle with cancer, with not just the patient, but all the members of the family and how everybody's impacted by it. And it does so with a lot of heart and humor. And I feel like that's one of the things that has really reached out and kind of spoken to the cancer community. I was reading a statistic somewhere, and I think one out of four people know someone or have been affected by cancer. It might actually be as high as one out of three. So it's a lot of people. And it's, I don't know, it's just it's a special project. We met some really great people on it. The cast was amazing.
And you know what? I think what's so great about the show, it's like, you know, it's a sitcom. You know, a family sitcom and a best friend sitcom, and it's like, it's really, really fun. But under that, you have, like, you know, obviously real issues and real pain and real struggle that people are going through. And anytime I think that you can combine, you know what I mean, it's just like, you know, fun and laughter with, like, real issues and real relationships. I mean, it's amazing. It goes back to kind of all the Norman Lear, the classic Norman Lear shows, like All in the Family. It's like, it is funny, but they are really touching upon real, real issues that people deal with. And but do it in a really fun way, and it's like, it's still entertaining at the end of the day, but it's just like, you're also, your heart is enriched because it's not superficial, it's not just silliness. And I think that balance, you know what I mean, especially in a YA context, is was amazing. So yeah, I mean, it was a really great show to be a part of.
Both of you have been involved with so many cutting-edge shows over the last decade. So do you still hear from people saying, you know, bring back Alexa and Katie, bring back Afro Samurai in the sequel, bring back Super Ninjas? Do you still get people who love those shows so much that they don't want to part with it? They want to come back.
You know what? That is so wonderful to hear. I do get tweets and messages from people all the time about the shows, especially Afro Samurai and Super Ninjas. And something that's been really interesting, I guess with Afro Samurai, I get a lot of tweets from people who get Afro Samurai tattoos and they send their tattoos. And then with Super Ninjas, lately there have been kids who grew up watching the show. You know, they must have been like, I don't know, 8 or 10 or 11, and they're all in college now, like, and they write out and they're like, oh, they were so inspired by it, or they're, you know, thinking about studying filmmaking or, you know, writing for television because of that show, or it ended up introducing, you know, a lifelong love of, like, martial arts or, like, Asian culture for them, which is all really gratifying. But I think the ones that really hit me the most is, for a lot of kids at the time, and this was before Marvel Cinematic Universe and all that, you know, this was, like, one of the first shows that showed a girl and two boys of color as heroes on television. And that's one of the reasons why we wanted to create the show, because at the time, it was only really, like, sort of women and, like, people of color, if they were in superhero shows at all or movies, they were sort of the victims, like, they're the ones being rescued all the time, and we wanted to create a show where they were doing the rescuing. And so there's, like, all these people write in, it's like, oh, my gosh, I'd never seen myself on TV before as a kid, like, fighting crime and doing something good and saving people, and then, like, sort of wrestling with, you know, do I do this for the glory of it, or do I do it because it's the right thing to do? And so that has been probably the most satisfying part of the Super Ninjas experience.
Mm-hmm. Let's wrap it up on this. Do you have any other projects coming up? And even more important, if both your show gets renewed and the Villains of Valley View get renewed, can you say crossover episode for season two?
That's a funny question. I guess I'd have to talk to the other creators of the other show. I'm not sure. I'm not sure that they truly exist in the same universe. You know what I mean? But, you know, so I'm not so sure about that. But I forget the first part of the question.
You know, it's funny because I feel like, I don't know. They seem like they're very different universes. Like our show is like a single camera television show. So it's filmed more like a movie. It's very cinematic. It's an action comedy. Villains of Valley View, from what I've seen, is a multi-camera. So it's like a family sitcom. There's a lot of living room, it seems like. And it's more of that classic sitcom structure with supervillains. So I'm not sure what a crossover would look like.
Yeah, I don't know. But, I mean, we're definitely working true to form with, you know, developing some other projects. You know, we have one that's animated, one that's another, like, family thing, one that's actually even outside of our normal realm. So it's like, I think that we always have to keep irons in the fire. And, you know, you started this conversation by saying that we have kind of an eclectic career. And, you know, I mean, in some ways it's about the opportunities, but in some ways it's like they're all facets of us exploring, you know what I mean, of our creativity. So it's been fantastic that we've been able to kind of, to, you know, create these different worlds. And, you know, if there are audience out there who, you know, want even more of it. You know what I mean? The idea of, you know, some of these things coming back, it's just like, of course. I mean, everything, we would love that. And it feels so good to have your work out there and that people are liking it still. Because everything is part of its own, you know, time. But, you know, I mean, at least for now that they can, you know, survive and be a little bit timeless for just a little bit longer. You know what I mean? Everything, you know, will, you know, expire, you know what I mean, and maybe not feel like it's of the day, but it's nice to hear that some of these things still are very relevant and still are, you know, we could definitely, you know, reinvigorate something like Afro Samurai and Super Ninjas and, you know, of course the kids are all grown up now, so it's like it'd be a totally different world.
Yeah, it'd be fun to follow them, like, as adults, or maybe them mentoring a new group of kids, you know, following in their footsteps. Yeah, I'm down for that. I don't know if Nickelodeon is listening, but, you know, we would totally do something like that. But I think to the bigger point is, like, with these projects that we have, you know, I guess at this point we're kind of a little bit known for genre shows, or a genre becomes sort of a hallmark of our projects, but it's not really the destination necessarily for us. Like, for us, genre or working within a genre helps us explore the complexities of the human condition. And so at the end of the day, it's really about characters. And I think that's what connects fans to our work, is, like, it's the characters. We fall in love with the characters. And everybody talks about, like, in ninjas, you know, there's three ninjas. They're like, oh, am I a Mike, an Owen, or an Amanda? You know, and then, you know, with Alexa Katie, it's like you're more an Alexa or a Katie. You know, with this one, with our upcoming one, Ultraviolet and Black Scorpion, I believe that people see themselves in the characters. They fall in love with Ultraviolet and Black Scorpion, as well as the family and Violet's friend, Maya. And there's some other surprises. But also, there is the whole mythology of the masks and the different powers. And it's like, which mask suits you the best? Which one will find you? Like, what, you know, brings out your personality? Because that's sort of what the masks do, is they enhance the character traits of the person that they find, right? So it always comes back to character for us at the end of the day. And I think,
and I think it, with all of these projects, you know, it may look easy, you know what I mean, to the audience and to the viewer, but these things are all very hard to get made. It's always like a struggle to bring something else into the world. And so, you know, the stars have to align in one way or the other. And, you know, on this particular show, Ultraviolet Black Scorpion, it's just like, you know, the stars were aligning, but it wasn't without kinks. It was, like, difficult, you know what I mean, to get past some of these obstacles. But, you know, like, you know, somehow we were able to keep it all going. And so it was – It's been a fantastic journey, and I cannot wait for you know, America and the world to see Scarlett and JR and the rest of our amazing cast. You know, because even though those two are the superheroes, it's like the family, Nina and Thiago and Fred Maya. It's like they're and Brian. They're also, I mean, Luis. They're all so wonderful to watch, and I can't wait for them to see it.
Yeah, and the journey's not over for us. We're spending this whole afternoon, like, looking at VFX and improving VFX on the show. So we're still in the process of post-production on it.
And you can start seeing Ultraviolet and Black Scorpion a week from Friday, June 3rd, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, 2.5-hour episodes back-to-back on the Disney Channel, and that will follow the premiere of The Villains, Valley View. That's at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, also 2 back-to-back episodes. And if you want more details about both programs, here's where you go online. It's DisneyNow.com. It's DisneyNow.com. Ultraviolet and Black Scorpion, first 2 episodes, back-to-back, a week from Friday, at 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Leo Chu, Eric Garcia, thank you both very much for joining us. It's been a pleasure all the way. Good luck with this series. And if it's like what you have done so far over the last decade or so, it's going to be another winner.
Thank you so much, Simon. Much appreciated.
Fun.
It's great to be here.
You're very, very welcome, Leo. It's been a pleasure. Take care. All the greatest.
All right.
Thanks
bye.
Again. Bye.
Leo Chu and Eric Garcia joining us live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and California, respectively. When we come back, Faces is coming back next month on Nickelodeon as part of the Nick Jr. block, and it's got a music party to boot. We'll have executive producer David Kleiner with us, plus classic trivia question of the week, brand new question. Do you have the correct answer? Well, we'll find out, and we'll do that after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. www.blogsofray.com, speaker.com, and tune.com, together reaching over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Check out the Independent Music Showcase this Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, the Independent Music Showcase here on Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget Best BTR 24/7 at youtube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised. First of 3 episodes we're doing this pre-Memorial Day week. Simon Abbott with you live from New York. 74 degrees at the bottom of the hour. If you have a question or comment for our guests ahead, ring it in, 646-652-2906. It's 646-652-2906. Again, welcome to those of you tuning us in on our brand-new podcast affiliate, ACAST. That's A-C-A-S-T. We appreciate all of you coming on board. Remember, Face, a wonderful orange screen with a wonderful face that came around first on September 5th, 1994. And people just love that face with a da-da-da-da all over that decade and beyond. Well, Face, starting on Monday, June 6th, is coming back at 11 a.m. Eastern Pacific Time with a new series for preschoolers and everybody else, too. It's called Face's Music Party. And joining us live right now to talk about it is executive producer David Kleiner. David, welcome in. Let's see if David is on the screen. Oh, apparently not. Okay, David, if you're listening, let's try it again. Let's see if David is ready to go.
Hi, can
David,
you hear me?
There. Yes, we are on. Yes, David, welcome aboard. David, how do you say your last name? Make sure I got you pronounced right.
Hi, can you hear me? It's David Kleiner.
Yeah. Kleiner, great. And David, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from lovely Glendale, California, right in Los Angeles.
Oh, excellent. Well, David, it's great to have you with us. And talk about how long Nick and Nick Jr. have been thinking about bringing Face back.
I don't know how long they've been thinking about it, but I'll tell you how it came about. Nick Jr. wanted to do a show that was sort of like Total Request Live for preschoolers. Imagine it, like, you know, music. There are lots of online music videos, et cetera, et cetera. And that, you know, do well with that audience, and they wanted to create a platform where we could showcase some of these songs. And I developed something else. I developed a something that had different characters, but face was a component in it. And I remember very clearly, you know, it's like post-pandemic vibes. We're on a Zoom call. I'm pitching it to the new president of animation at Nickelodeon and Paramount. And I'm saying, like, you know, well, face is a part of this too. And this woman, Ramsey Naito, she was like, whoa, face. I love face being incorporated. I love face. And I, you know, it's hard to read the room when you're on Zoom. But when I got off the call, I talked to the other producers I was working with, and I was like, you know, we're throwing away everything, and just let's make this about face. Because, you know, there's a legacy with face, and it's just fascinating, like, all the different sort of versions of face is, you know, this was before emojis, you know. Face got off the air before emojis, and so I kind of call face the OG emoji. And, yeah, that's we decided to bring it back. It's been less than a year that we've been developing this and making the show.
And by the way, for all of you out there, if you have a question or comment for our guest, David, give us a call, 646-652-2906. Numbers with anywhere, catch us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio. Also, you can check out our wonderful chat room. It's SimonApple04 by name. Put your thoughts in the room. Sooner you do, sooner we address them. David, how fun has it been to bring such a iconic face back, if you will? Because if you remember face, he filled the screen, was always a lot of fun. You never knew, like, what was, because he appeared all over the place. He was doing shorts. He was doing interstitials. He was doing, like, introductions to commercials. It was like he was all over. He was like the Dick Clark, if you will, of Nick Jr.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me? I'm on a different phone now.
Yep, you're coming through great. David, you're coming through
excellent.
Great.
Excellent. Excellent. It's funny that you say Dick Clark at face. I mean, look, it made sense that, you know, since face was an interstitial host back in the day, it made sense just to have face be this character that loves music and is sharing music. And, you know, honestly, the approach that we took with face is the older brother that turns you onto music, the older sibling that turns you onto music, the cool aunt and uncle that turns you onto music. So, yeah, I hope that answers your question. But, you know, it just made sense the more we looked at it that, like, if we're going to do music, and I always felt like the old face, you know, our face is a little different, but, like, the old face still did have that sense of playfulness and fun and exuberance. And again, just there's nothing like that connecting with the audience with this full screen character. So, you know, we thought it would work, and we're feeling good about it.
The unique thing about this series is that there's a segment really for everybody. There's basically four segments. You have the songs, which you pick, so your playlist. You have also sing-alongs of nursery rhymes. You also have sort of like the educational or edutainment side of things where the people watching have a chance to learn about an instrument or learn about a certain way music comes across. And then you have a dance at the end. What was it like to put those elements together and make it as much of a complete show as possible?
Well, look, I mean, what holds the shows together – you know, is a sense of a theme. But we also didn't, you know, we didn't want to be too on the nose with any of it. And I'm glad you're recognizing, I mean, it's very obvious to anybody who watches shows, there's a lot of visual variety. And I also think of this show as being kind of a post-internet experience. Like, we did show the show to some kids who immediately recognized that we were doing something. They were like, oh, it's kind of like I'm watching YouTube. There are different things. Which I was like, wow, that's more astute than some of the parent comments we got. But to bring it all together, look, we honestly, a big part of bringing it together was a commitment to, you know, having visual variety. Like, we weren't going to worry about that. We were going to, you know, you mentioned the sing-along segment. You know, we basically reached out to indie animators all over the globe that wanted to participate. And we gave them a lot of creative freedom, you know, I mean, within certain guidelines. And, and those are some of my favorite segments in the show, you know, just letting people do it. We just really wanted to make everything feel handmade. You know, look, we went back and forth about how to approach the dance segments. because like there's a part of you that wants to make it feel like dance on social platforms these days, you know. But like it was kind of fun to take, have this, you know, in living color approach practically, you know, because it felt fresh in a way, you know, like it was just sort of like it just was fun and. You know, and as with a lot of things, and I know you guys talk to people who make TV shows all the time, also this thing came together pretty quickly. So while there are a lot of intentional choices, like we just kind of just, you know, dug in our heels and did it. So, yeah, and again, you know, we knew that every episode, every cart is held together by a theme. And, you know, as the season progresses, the scripts try to sort of like – follow face on a little journey of discovery about that theme, whether it be about wind or it be about change, you know, like, you know, social emotional things that kids in that age group, concepts that they're thinking about. So, yeah.
When it comes to the songs that face plays, What kind of standard or what kind of benchmark did you set for what songs you put on?
Okay, so we didn't – I don't want to use proper nouns of other media folks that are doing – are in the same game. But we didn't want to – we wanted to push the envelope in terms of getting modern pop on there and not re-recording the modern pop, if you know what I'm saying. Like – you know, we wanted to have – look, kids, I believe in this thing that's like music right now. It's like holistic discovery if you're a young person. More kids are learning about, like, what a cool song is from YouTube Shorts than they are, like, sitting in the back seat with their parents as they're driving the car. So we wanted to keep – most of the songs are upbeat, for sure. And then when we looked at the – we also wanted to include traditional songs because kids are hearing those songs in their preschool and stuff. But we wanted to re-record those and also make them a little more upbeat and fun. And, look, there are a lot of people doing music online. There are a lot of YouTube content creators making versions of these classic songs for kids in this space, right? And we just didn't want to – we wanted to do something different. We wanted to use indie animators that would make these great visuals, but then also indie musicians that would kind of have their own spin on the song. So, I don't know. Modern pop is important to us. You know, also, do the songs themselves meaningfully connect to the theme? And then for the dance segments, we just had to make sure that, you know, they were danceable and fun. You know, the music part, it is one of the most challenging parts of the show because it's so fun to sit around in a room and, like, think about all the songs you would include in a show. But then when you really get down to it, like, are the lyrics appropriate, but we don't want to be cheesy and, like, change the lyrics. You know, it's all this stuff. But then we also kind of acknowledge that, like, kids are getting music from everywhere. It's everywhere. It's not, you know. You know, and also I do think kids appreciate not hearing for the modern pop. They don't want to hear the modern pop re-recorded. They want to feel like they're listening to songs that their older brother or sister are listening to too.
Face's Music Party, by the way, is going to be running on Nickelodeon as part of a special Music Mondays block when it premieres on June 6th, 11 a.m. Eastern and Pacific time. So on Nickelodeon, you'll not only see the premiere of Face's Music Party, but you'll also see special musical theme episodes of shows like the popular Paw Patrol, Blaze and the Monster Machines, Peppa Pig, Baby Sharks, Big Show, Bubble Guppies, and more. Also, that same block will also be running on Nick Jr., which is a separate channel. And that will be starting at noon Eastern time and running to 5 p.m. The Nickelodeon block will be from 7 a.m. to noon. And again, that's where Face the Music Party will run at 11 a.m. Eastern time. We've got David Klenner. He's the executive producer of the program, and he's with us live from Glendale, California, this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Abbott, I'm with you live from New Haven, New York, where right now it is 74 degrees at the bottom of the hour. Happy you're with us for the first of three episodes we're doing this week on your free Memorial Day week of 2022. If you have a question or comment for David, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Our second three episodes this week coming away on Wednesday. Beef Beast in the Pacific. Dusty Ruiz, the editor-in-chief of the Weather Channel Español, which started earlier this month. That's going to be our lead guest. And then on Friday, very special lead guest, Graham Rowland. You know him as executive producer of Lost, also the popular Amazon series Jack Ryan. Now he's creator and executive producer of Dark Winds, the highly anticipated AMC series that premieres on June 12th. Also in the executive producer chair, Robert Redford, and the creator of Game of Thrones, George R. R. Martin. There's a lot of people catching this show because it's one which has a great Native American cast and production crew. It's Graham Rowland from Dark Winds, Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, and Internet Radio exclusive right here on Tomorrow will be televised. David, how did you find Face, or the voice of Face, who's Cedric Williams in this case?
Well, I mean, look, working at Nickelodeon is great because casting is taken very seriously. And we listen to a lot of folks for Face, a lot. And look, Cedric, you know, really there are two components to why Cedric fits so well for us. I mean, Cedric is, I hate to use this term, but you inevitably use it when you work at Nickelodeon. Cedric bleeds orange, like literally has all the like bobbleheads you could have of SpongeBob and, you know, just really, really loves Nickelodeon. And also, he has a deep, deep affinity with Face. I mean, he was a Face kid. He watched Face every day. So there was a love there for sure. But then also he's just like so, you know, he has this sort of exuberance. He has this sort of energy. He also like, you know, he's been working on some anime projects. So he's just really versatile. And we wanted somebody that not only could, you know, be crazy and improv sometimes and do the vocal gymnastics and do some improv like Robin Williams or something. But then we also wanted somebody who could connect on, you know, a Fred Rogers level. So, Cedric just really understood that, you know, just really understood it. And we're just very psyched to be working with him.
Talk about the closing segment, the dancing that happens, because each episode has a specific dance routine, you have specific cake dance. How did you put those together? And I'm particularly interested because right now CBS has a show called Come Dance With Me, where you have these incredible child preteen dancers dancing with their parents or another family member. And I have to say, I've really been impressed with the way that show has gone and the fact that it's really brought these family members together in such a wonderful, fun, and personal way.
Yeah, I need to see that show. I mean, look, we, again, there's an, you know, when you're doing this show, there was an initial inclination to be like, oh, let's make it like social media platforms. Like, let's have the dance be really simple, but and you know, be very direct, like it's shot on a phone or whatever. But I don't know. It just seemed like the obvious choice in a way. And we kind of morphed into this other thing where we wanted the cast to be, you know, basically the age of our audience. They could be a little older, but and we did have to get kids who could stick it. And really be great. And they came together. I mean, I'm just going to be honest. It's one of those TV production things. We shot the show really quickly. Like, we did all of the live action segments all together in like a week. So, you know, I was like, look, let's just go old school. And this is in living color style. And this is covered fast. And that's how they came together. I mean, we worked with these wonderful, wonderful choreographers who work with kids. They're a team called Lindsay and Craig. And what I liked about them, this is going to be an odd thing to say, but they have their own kind of internal sense of like where dance is going with kids, and they definitely feel like, sort of, you know, the kids are often made to do more kind of adult dance moves as opposed to doing like playful, fun dance moves. And I really appreciated their thought behind that. And then the other thing is that there's just a reality to shooting an aggressive schedule with a cast of young people. Like, the vibe has to be totally right. The kids you cast have to be totally right because it's like they're in camp. and they can't be distracted because you don't have much time to shoot this stuff, and they have to support each other and be good. So there were a lot of factors. I would say the casting was, like, super drawn out and intentional, and then the shooting was, like, you know, it was, like, spent a lot of time preparing that meal, and we ate it really fast, like, because we were shooting episodes back to back to back. So, you know, look, I would love to have a little more time, and it's like, oh, my God, we're doing The Greatest Showman, and it's awesome. But, like, we had to just, like, bang those out a little bit, and I actually think it's great because you can – there was a commitment to, like, if the kids don't totally fit the routines, that's fine. They're, like, kids trying to dance. And, you know, you've probably only seen one episode, but as we go on, you know, we have kids with disabilities dancing. We have different body types there. Like, it really – there is a commitment to show kids, you know, all kinds of kids represented on the screen. And, like, some kids are, like, tremendous dancers, and some kids are just, like, having fun, you know. So, yeah, that's how those came together, you know. We banged them out, kind of, for sure.
Two questions in one to wrap things up, David. First of all, what's it been like for you having a career as an executive producer? And secondly, if this series works out, any thought about maybe putting an episode on in prime time or, let's say, early evening when kids and their parents can watch?
Well, I think that would be great. For your second question, I will say that I can't speak to the programming concern, you know, programming concerns of Nickelodeon. There's definitely – we are trying to make a show that is an enjoyable co-viewing experience in that – I'm just going to be honest. I have kids that are older, but, like, especially music content, like online and stuff and other music shows, aren't always the kind of things parents love to watch with their kids, you know, if you know what I'm saying. So we are hoping that, yeah, maybe that would be great. I would love that. I would absolutely love that. I would have to say also – to that end, like, the dream of the show is that, like, it becomes the platform on which an artist that is known in the world premieres a song, or an artist that does make songs for kids premieres a song. Like, you know, we slowly do build up to realize, more fully realize that Total Request Live scenario. And then as far as me being an executive producer, like, I know you talk to a lot of creators and EPs on this show, like, in the 90s, I was making low-budget music videos, so, and I've worked in reality TV, I've done a whole bunch of different things, so, for me, I'm one of those guys that, while I'm older, I'm kind of an everything guy, which is, like, a lot of younger people in the business today. Like, younger people in the business today can edit, can shoot, and also, you know, love to write and direct and do everything. I'm really an older guy that's like that, and while I've, you know, managed teams and stuff, I can still bring that energy if I can be hands-on. So for me, this has been great. I also have been in the last decade, like, doing a lot more digital content stuff, and so I feel like understanding that has helped me not only create the show, but sort of understand what it could be. There are a lot of moving parts. I mean, I have to say that my – you know, making the show, the producing partners we have are incredible. Jonas Morgenstein, Emma Molson Donnie, like, they run this company, Jonas and Company, and, you know, that's been great because they've just done so much heavy lifting in terms of the animation and everything. But, you know, it's been great, and it's also been very much, since it's the first season and since this was driven by a network initiative, it's been very much a team effort, and I've done what I can to sort of, like, develop this with everyone and sort of, like, constantly feel like, is this what we want to be doing? Like, how can we evolve this? So, yeah, it's been a great experience. It's really, I just hope the show is the kind of thing where, you know, for some kids, if, like, actual three-year-olds are watching this, it might be the first time they ever see another kid play a trumpet. Or to see another kid dance. Like, it's on so simple. We just want to make it, like, yeah, there's a slight, there's not really, this is Nick Jr. It's not educational. Like, we're trying to make something that just celebrates music, reemphasizes the fact that music is all around you, and it can be this huge force in your life, and just have fun with it. And that's our goal.
To the person, by the way, who just called in, we're sorry we can't take your call because, unfortunately, we're out of time for the segment. We want to get our classic trivia question in. And thank you for calling. We just want to acknowledge you for that. Again, the series is Spaces Music Party. It premieres Monday, June 6th, 11 a.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on Nickelodeon. Check your local listings for Nickelodeon is available in your area on cable and satellite. And,
yeah,
by the way, also, the Music Mondays, that full five-hour block, they'll not only be running on Nickelodeon from 7 a.m. to noon Eastern Pacific Time, but also on Nick Jr., which is a separate cable channel from noon to 5 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time. For more details about the program online, go to www.nick.com, www.nick.com, Faces Music Party. It all starts Monday, June 6th, 11 a.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. David, thank you again for joining us. Thank you and your whole Nick and organization for bringing Face back. I have a hunch it's going to be a winner all the way. David, are you there?
Yeah, I am. Hello?
Yes, David, I'm just saying thank you again for joining us. Congratulations on getting the show started and bringing Face back, and hopefully it's going to be a long, long, and great run.
All right. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome, David. Take care. Have a super week.
All right. You too. Take it easy. Bye.
David joining us from Glendale, California. Now time for our classic trivia question segment. We did not have a winner for the question that we brought you over the last 2 weeks, and that question was, on the TV series Quincy ME starring Jack Klugman, what does ME stand for? The answer, medical examiner. That's right, medical examiner. So nobody got our two book prizes, the best-selling book Binge Times and a Rugrats Hanukkah. So we're offering again with this classic trivia question. If you first get the correct answer, you will win both prizes. Here's the question. What NBC and ABC series paired Tom Bosley from Happy Days and Tracy Nelson? What NBC and ABC series, the show ran 3 seasons, first on NBC, last 2 on ABC, what NBC and ABC series paired Tom Bosley with Tracy Nelson? If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember to include your name where you e-link from. Previous winners not eligible. If we don't get a winner by the end today, post a question tomorrow morning on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon. DWBT. Remember, in order to win, you got to play in. So do so, and all the very best. Thanks to all of our guests for being here today and all of you for tuning in. We're back on Wednesday, and joining us will be as our lead guest, Susy Ruiz, the editor-in-chief of the Weather Channel and Espanol. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up on episodes missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out our podcast sites, including our newest podcast affiliate, Acast. And don't forget our website, Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Tomorrow will be televised. That's hyphens with between the words, .onpodium.com. Love to hear from you. What do you think about our show today and our guests and your thoughts for where TV is at and where it's going? Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. We do respond within 24 hours because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed are those of the participants. Now say those of Blog Talk Radio and other services program. And so is BTR's General Manager, Jay Soderberg, Head of Content. Website service provided by On Podium, the internet's new podcast outpost. Guitar Spakus is our web coordinator. Tomorrow we tell by sports today, Audible.com, the audio marketplace of Amazon.com. Remember, Audible transforms the way you hear the world. To listen to all the good stuff, go to audibletrial.com/televised. Makes a great gift for you or someone you love. For Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your Monday. Be back on Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. You know where. Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, Tuner Radio, all of our podcast affiliates, including our newest one, Acast, and, of course, our website, Tomorrow We Televise. .onpodium.com. What you have to do between now and then, make it safe and great. If you haven't vaccinated, see your doctor, find out your medical situation, check out about the treatments available to you right now, and then make a great choice, your choice. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.